Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Good Friday morning. Thanks so much for listening to us on what's going to be another rainy day. And we'll ask later in the hour, how wet is it? You can post your answers to that now on our webpage or our Facebook page. Come on, we do it in the summer, we do it in the winter. How wet is it? Write it up. We do how hot is it? How cold is it? Write up how wet is it? And we'll read some of them on the air coming up later this hour at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or do it on our Facebook group. But right now, earlier this month, the decision by the Obama administration to support extending asylum status to cover immigrant victims of domestic violence was made public. As executive director of SAKI for South Asian Women, a New York community community organization fighting violence against women from South Asia, Purvi Shah supports this ruling, which came out of a case in San Francisco involving a woman from Mexico, and she has a few other ideas for protecting immigrant women for that matter. But again, what's new here compared to the Bush administration is that the Obama folks will support extending asylum status to cover immigrant victims of domestic violence in cases where their countries of origin do not adequately prosecute that crime. So, Purvi Shah, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Now, asylum is granted to refugees in general. This is the asylum law, with a well-founded fear of persecution on account of race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion, unquote. So has the Obama administration added a new category here, which is, you know, on the basis of sex or fear of domestic violence, or are they just including abused women in that catch-all of a particular social group?
It's absolutely the latter. I think it's really important to understand that gender-based asylum has been a part of the asylum process since the mid-90s in the United States. And what has really happened is not really a new policy, but just a reinterpretation of asylum regulations that would include domestic violence survivors as part of a member of a social group that is being persecuted. And what's really important to understand is that this is a very necessary but narrow opportunity for immigration relief. What's important is that the person has to prove that there is a fear of persecution or actual persecution, and that there are state forces that are unable or unwilling to act in that situation, which is quite a high bar of evidence and standard.
How clear-cut is the change in policy? Because what I understand is the Obama administration hasn't actually issued new rules yet.
Exactly.
What they've said in the brief was that this one woman from Mexico could qualify for asylum based on her abuse.
Exactly. I think it is a profound shift in the sense that it will hopefully actually lead to regulations that will enable a specific group of survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault to be able to get access to asylum relief. I see it more as is that if you were on the LA freeway and there was a 10-car pileup, a few of the cars have been removed.
Yeah.
And now we need to work to actually getting regulations to setting a process so that there are consistent standards that can be deployed in terms of adjudicating.
And so we take from this that the Obama administration considers Mexico not to have adequate prosecution of domestic violence?
That's part of it. But I think, again, one has to go to the case particulars. In terms of asylum, it's always a case-by-case scenario. So in terms of the particulars of this particular case, what had happened is that the woman had been suffering abuse, marital rape, almost burned to death. And she had gone to the police, who had dismissed the reports as a private matter, quote-unquote. When she had approached a judge, he had tried to seduce her. So she approached various state agencies that were supposed to protect her, and they were not able to do so. So I think in terms of as we think about what asylum is supposed to afford, it's supposed to afford surrogate protection, right? We believe that the state should protect its citizens, and asylum affords surrogate protection when another state cannot do that.
And listeners, we want to hear from you, especially if you're a woman who has immigrated to this country. Is domestic abuse a big problem in the country that you came from? And are the laws and the enforcement of those laws adequate? Or do you think your country of origin or women from your country of origin should qualify for asylum in the United States if they fear domestic violence and not being protected from that domestic violence? What countries should be included here? Talk about your countries of origin, one of our many call-ins for immigrants from anywhere, and this on this very serious and important question. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Purvi Shah from the group South Asian Women. 212-433-WNYC or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Would you name some countries other than Mexico that you think women in general, if they're facing domestic violence, should be granted asylum from?
You know, what's amazing and unfortunate is that domestic violence exists in every country. And again, this is why gender-based asylum is a case-by-case scenario, because you have to prove that the state cannot act. What is really critical, and I hope we take away from this, is that I hope it opens up a legal avenue that existed before. We at SUCKEY have had a handful of survivors who were able to access gender-based asylum in the 90s, and we are very happy that that was afforded to them. Similarly to this particular situation of LR, it was also cases where survivors were married to police officers or there was a lack of state support. What we really need to articulate and address, however, is further education of attorneys and judges on these new possibilities, the development of the regulations, as you spoke about, and really talk through why does domestic violence exist across the world, how can we end it, and what are the legal resources and options. We know that not only around the world, but even in the United States, there's a dearth of legal services and access to survivors of violence in general, and particularly immigrant survivors of violence who face additional hurdles and challenges.
Let's take a phone call. David in Woodside, you're on WNYC. Hello, David.
Hi. I run a program that visits detained immigrants detained at Elizabeth Detention Center, and I've been visiting many women who have been in this situation over the past 7 years. I think it's important for the audience to understand that these women, who are some of the world's most traumatized people, oftentimes find themselves inside detention centers for months, if not even years, with no freedom, right back in a brand new traumatic situation.
Is that because refugees seeking asylum typically do so at the airport when they arrive? And so it's, you know, because it's expected that you flee your home country because of the threat there. So that then a process starts to determine if you're just trying to sneak in or not?
Yeah, it's essentially how long it takes to get a fair due process in front of an immigration judge. And because it can take a long time for them to get legal help because they can get backlogged for numerous reasons. And it's really sad and extremely unfair. And how they're treated inside, I mean, oftentimes they're not getting treatment for their abuse inside. There's little health care, more or less mental health care inside.
David, in what capacity are you visiting these women? Are you a lawyer?
No, I'm a coordinator of a Sojourner's Visitation program,
uh-huh.
A program that inspired the movie The Visitor.
So in your contact at these detention centers, is there a new hope among a certain group of detained asylee seekers that they're going to be allowed to get asylum in the United States because of this new policy having to do with domestic violence victims?
Many of them may not be aware of it at this point, and I think that's part of our job to speak with that to them about that and ensure their lawyers, who should certainly know about it.
David,
but I know that
David, I'm sorry.
Obama fans inside detention. So
say it again.
There was certainly a lot of hope once Obama came into office for the detainees. They were certainly supporting him, and thus far, not a lot has come out yet. So,
Thank you very much. Purvi Shah, just to go back to your previous answer, do I take it that you don't want to identify different countries, specific countries by name, where this is particularly a problem? Because isn't that exactly what the Obama administration is starting a process to do, to say if there's an individual who's a victim of domestic violence and who's from a country that's not going to take care of her, then we'll let her in under asylum laws?
I think your question is very fair. I think naming countries gets us to a different kind of conversation than the real conversation, which is, why is it that we as communities fail to protect survivors of violence in general? And what are the legal rights and remedies that we need to have across the world in order to make sure that every woman is safe at home? So in terms of the United States and thinking about, again, this restoration of gender-based asylum as one possible immigration relief, I want to add to what the last caller just said and said, it's a very, very high evidence bar. Not only do you have to meet all of the rigorous standards, but you also have to file for asylum within 1 year of entry into the United States. It also assumes that you have the capacity to actually leave your home country, arrive in the United States. You have the financial means and resources. You have the understanding that you might now be able to access gender-based asylum, and also that you can hopefully get an attorney to help you in that cause.
And, you know, immigrant women, where are you today? 212-433-WNYC. Talk about your countries of origin, because almost everybody calling in, and they've filled almost all our lines, are men calling to say this is too loose a legal standard for asylum. These are cases of fraud, things like that. Let's take one of those calls.
Sure.
Joel on Long Island. Joel, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, good morning. I was listening to your show. I am an immigration attorney. And I would say to the visitor of your show, if you look at some of these cases, and to do justice to the listeners of the program, some of these women do get asylum, especially from Central America, where the most cases are prevalent. And once they get asylum and they get legality, they turn around and they sponsor their abusing husbands.
Purvisha, are you familiar with this as a true pattern?
Not our experience in terms of the handful of women that we've worked with who have accessed gender-based asylum. They have not turned around and tried to sponsor their abusers. I think similarly, we need to look at this in a macro perspective. So, for example, Canada, which also has access specifically and has regulations around gender-based asylum, 2 years after they put the regulations into place, 2% of the 40,000 cases that they had in terms of asylum claims were gender-based. So I know that there's often the response that, oh my God, this will open the floodgates. Women will be coming from everywhere. But that is actually not materially nor factually true. So I think similarly, when we look at other provisions, for example, the Violence Against Women Act, it is not possible for victims of trafficking who might be able to access a T visa to therefore then sponsor traffickers. So there's actually a lot of regulations in place to get around these situations.
Do you think there's a lot of shame among women who've been through this in a way that would make them reluctant to talk about it, even women who haven't? Because I'm telling you, I'm looking at our board, it's Tim, it's Martin, it's Peter, it's George, it's Gary, it's Scott. And we just talked to Joel.
Thank you so much for raising that, because I think this gets back to the core issue around domestic violence, which is there is often shame. There is also trauma. It is a very, very difficult situation. How many of us are comfortable talking about marital rape, almost being burned alive? It's really a difficult issue, and that's why it's even more important for there to be education, for there to be legal attorneys and advocates that are versed in the issues, and for us to be able to support survivors to articulate these stories. This is by no means an easy process.
Here's another immigration lawyer who wants to talk back to our last immigration lawyer caller, Joyce in Bound Brook. Hi, Joyce.
Hi, how are you?
Okay,
I was just really appalled by what I heard that other attorney say. I represent women who are in these situations with victims of domestic violence in their home countries, who have no kind of relief, who cannot get protection from their local police because the police do not respect even what's written on their books, and they don't respect the women. And these women are very often, they have been horrifically beaten, women who have been, burned with cigarette burns and victims of marital rape and watching their children abused, it is just awful.
So, Joyce, an immigration lawyer we tend to think of as somebody who represents immigrants or potential immigrants. Who would Joel be representing if that's his point of view on that?
I was just flabbergasted when he said that, because I've probably done, close between 50 and 100. And I've been practicing for about 20 years. And asylum, I started doing gender-based asylum maybe about 8 or 10 years ago, and I probably represented somewhere between 50 and 100 women. I have never seen anybody turn around. There are and sponsor their abusing spouses. I think what he's talking about are self-petitions for women who are claiming domestic violence who are married, but that would make sense. I mean, I've just never seen anybody do that. And the women that I've represented, and by the way, I've also represented 3 men. There's not just women. I've represented 3 men.
With respect to domestic violence claims?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
It does happen.
Absolutely.
It does happen.
And I mean, we don't think of men as being victims of violence, but they,
right.
they
but
can
it
be
happens
victims
sometimes,
of
course.
It does happen.
How does asylum, let me ask you since you're a lawyer, how does asylum status differ from the U visa, which is specifically offered to abused immigrant women already?
Well, the U visa is actually not exactly offered to abused immigrant women. There is something called you have to, in the U visa, you actually have to contribute to the conviction of an abuser, which means that when you're looking at abuse or some form of violence, you're looking at that violence that's occurred here in the United States. And you actually have to be a party to helping the prosecution get someone convicted. It's usually also not necessarily against oneself, but against the third party. And the U visa has a list of categories of crimes that are involved. But you have to get a certification from the police department that you have aided in the prosecution of a criminal and that that has led to some form of judicial action. Asylum is a very different kind of relief. It's saying that you are afraid to return to your country of origin because in your country of origin, you will not get protection there. And that's the form of that is very difficult.
Sure.
And I agree with your guest who says it's really difficult for people who come into this country who don't understand how our laws work, people who don't necessarily speak English, who don't understand the judicial process, who in their country have been victims of the judicial process.
And they need. I'm going to go because we're running out of time.
I'm sorry.
But, Joyce, very important points, and thank you very much for adding to this conversation.
You're quite welcome, and I'm really so glad that you're addressing this issue. It's a vitally important issue.
Thank you very much. And we have a few minutes left with Purvi Shah from the organization Saki for South Asian Women as we talk about the change in U.S. policy under the Obama administration from what had come before to extend asylum status to cover immigrant victims of domestic violence, hooked around a case of a woman from Mexico. And you work with some of the women who are already here, immigrant survivors of domestic violence.
That's right.
What does that work entail?
It entails a lot of different aspects. It entails responding to crisis situations. It entails informing survivors what their rights are in this country. It entails speaking to survivors in the languages of their native home countries and to provide a sense of support and also an understanding of what domestic violence is and that it's a crime in this country. One of the areas that particularly we're invested in is ensuring that there is access to remedies. We know that in this country, according to a survey done by the National Network to End Domestic Violence, in one day in September last year, there were more than nearly 10,000 situations of domestic violence that were unresponded to because there was a lack of resources. And one of the areas that we see a lack of resources is not only lack of access to legal remedies, but also to attorneys and to interpreters in the court system, which often immigrant survivors need in order to be able to articulate their situations if they don't speak English proficiently.
And Rose in Jackson Heights are on WNYC. Hi, Rose. Rosa.
Yes. Hi. Good morning, Brian. My name is Rosa Bramble-Weed, and I have been in your program before. And I think what the last speaker just mentioned, I think is very important. And the fact that many of the women who are domestic violence survivors, first of all, do not speak the language. There's a lot of fear for many of the undocumented women who have suffered from domestic violence to actually come through. Even the fact of making a phone call like this would be very fearful for many of our women. So the fact that this information is very important, but that it needs to also be disseminated into many different languages so that women who really need the help can actually hear it, as well as their advocates.
Thank you very much. All right, you ready for another challenge, Purvi?
Absolutely.
Scott and Leone, you're on WNYC. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
While I appreciate the guest's desire to not name names, don't you think it would be better for us to name those names and apply diplomatic pressure using so to achieve the same goals you're talking about?
I think that's an absolutely great role for a body like the UN and other multinational or sort of organizations that have that scope. Again, the purpose of asylum is not for the U.S. to kind of exert diplomatic pressure on particular nations. It's really to offer surrogate protection within the U.S. I also think before we kind of look to other countries, though that is really important to do so, we also should look within the United States on what we can do better to serve survivors of domestic violence here. I think sometimes we forget that there is much more that we can do. And similarly, one of the hallmarks of this is recently Governor Schwarzenegger's line item veto of domestic violence programs in California as part of budget reductions. We are not yet ready, even in this country, to say that we are willing to commit and support survivors of domestic violence, much less immigrant survivors who have such complicated issues, not only in terms of language access, but there might be threats of deportation or threats to their families and their home countries
by
the abusers.
But I think what Scott is getting at is, while we're waiting for things to modernize in various parts of the law of the world with respect to this kind of law, can we really be the repository for every woman from every country who feels that they are the victims of potential or real domestic violence and that the law in their country wouldn't protect them?
I don't see it as an either-or situation, right? First, I wouldn't say every woman in every country. Let's go back to the facts, which is that, again, in Canada, it was 2% of 40,000 asylum claims within 2 years of their official regulations coming out. Second,
even from Canada?
Exactly. And I think if you look at U.S. asylum claims, they've steadily gone down in the last 8 or 9 years. So it peaked around 40,000 in 2001. And more recently, it's been hovering around 30,000 and less.
But is this to say that the U.S. might look at the Canadian justice system and say Canada does not have adequate sexual abuse law, domestic abuse laws, or enforcement of them so that we're going to accept women even from Canada?
No, sorry. Let me clarify. So Canada has regulations around gender-based asylum.
Right.
So
it's people going to Canada.
Exactly, okay. And claiming gender-based asylum. And 2 years after they adopted these regulations, which we in the U.S. need to formalize, they only had 2% of their 40,000 claims based around gender issues. So I think we need to, again, not say, throw up our hands and
it's
say the floodgates are opening.
In the world. Yeah.
And also we need to understand that even as I'm certainly not saying that education in other countries, that action by advocates within those countries should not continue. It absolutely should. But let's also make a difference here where we can.
And Sophia in Lake Hopatcong, you're on WNYC. Hello, Sophia.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask your guest about the issue of children involved in these cases. As a new mom of a seven-month-old, I was just thinking about some of these women applying for asylum. Do the asylum regulations allow for them to bring their children with them? Does that open up huge issues of custody disputes? What do the regulations permit in that regard for children?
Purvi?
That's an excellent question. I think so often when we think of survivors of violence, their children are so much a concern for them. There is the opportunity to apply for derivatives as part of an appeal in terms of asylum. So that does include children as well. But again, you're assuming that somebody can just flee to another country herself and with her kids. So that's, you know, again, this is a super, super high bar. And we need to understand that our role is really to not only proactively end domestic violence by talking about it and changing attitudes, but also to increase the legal access and remedies.
One more. Anna in the Bronx, originally from Russia, right, Anna?
Right. I answered your plea.
Good. I'm glad somebody did.
It's actually good that I chimed in because what I'm about to say is going to relate to that guy, lawyer or not lawyer, who called a little bit a while ago and talked about diplomatic pressure. And I'm not necessarily talking about diplomatic pressure here. I want to alert people to the fact that, for example, in Russia, domestic violence is extremely prevalent. Violence against women, for sure. Date rape does not exist. It's not. So if you are with a man in a sort of date-like situation. If you went to somebody's apartment and you got raped, this is not a crime. And the problem is not even that the authorities are not going to recognize it as a crime. The problem is that the woman herself does not know that these things should not be perpetrated against her. So if you live in a capital in Moscow, for example, at least there, if your nose gets broken consistently, maybe somebody will do something, maybe. But again, you know, there is absolutely no social support, so the woman is really isolated. And
so
what
needs to be done?
Well, so what needs to be done? You know, I'm not sure how offering asylum, I mean, it breaks my heart to say this, but I'm not sure how it can do anything except by kind of publicizing the issue in Russia. For example, if somebody from Russia gets such an asylum, this could get publicized, and other women may learn that, in fact, it's not okay to tolerate to be somebody's punching bag, for example.
Purvisha?
Yes, absolutely. And also that we as communities in general, men and women together, understand that domestic violence destroys our communities and families. So it is absolutely necessary to have these legal options, including gender-based asylum. But we also have to keep our eye on the prize, which is to know that we are stronger as families and communities when we live in happy, healthy relationships, which do not include violence.
And that is where we're going to have to leave it with Purvi Shah, Executive Director of SAKHI, that's S-A-K-H-I, for South Asian Women. I guess that's not the Japanese alcoholic
beverage. No, it means woman friend in a number of South Asian languages.
Okay. And she was here to talk about the apparent new policy coming out of the Obama administration to make it easier for women to claim asylum status in the United States if they come from situations of domestic abuse in other countries and the law there won't protect them. Thank you very, very much for talking about this.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up later in the hour, a call in for our waterlogged summer. Get ready to answer the question, how wet is it? It's so wet this summer where you are that what? But first, what happens when robots become smarter than people and why we may soon find out. Stay tuned.